One of her new allies described Amara Enya as a breath of fresh air in this campaign for Chicago mayor, though she has run for mayor before. She's running as an outsider who embraces those who've been left out. And in a campaign season buffeted by headlines and big money, she has just weeks to get her message and the vote out. This week, it's a conversation with candidate Amara Enya. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. Mayoral candidate Amara Enya has a law degree from the U of I. She has her master's degree and doctorate in education and education policy. She speaks five languages, and she's been executive director of the Austin Chamber of Commerce. She's only now getting to be known as a presence on television, but she's been working in the community for years. Is all that enough to succeed as a mayoral candidate or mayor? Well, we're going to find out. Because this public policy consultant is getting the kind of financial backing that is now allowing her to compete in a field that is often dominated by the rich and politically powerful. So how's she doing? Well, let's ask. Amara Enya, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, in the past week or so, if I'm keeping count, you've launched three television commercials and are participating in a number of forums. How much of a difference has that $400,000 donation from Chance the Rapper made?
Well, it certainly helped us to get on the air and to reach the entire city of Chicago. I think it is a nice compliment to our ground game. We always had a heavy presence with people across the city, knocking on doors for us, canvassing for us. So getting up on television just helped to up our visibility, which has actually created a groundswell of new supporters and new volunteers.
And you have produced commercials that are very well done. Obviously, the one that I found the most interesting was you did the same commercial in English and Spanish. And unlike some candidates who sort of stumble through their reading of Spanish, you sound quite fluent.
Yes, I do speak Spanish. And we thought that it was important to reach the Latino community in particular. There's a lot of similarities in terms of me coming from an immigrant family and being able to identify with that community. And there's nothing more engaging and able to build a bridge than being able to speak in another language and to speak in their language. So it's just another aspect of how our campaign is able to identify with folks across the city.
Well, as you're getting more attention, you're also getting groups taking aim at you. Might as well get this out of the way first. And that is, this week there were the stories that focused on your struggles with the IRS and your student loans. We haven't heard any of your rivals openly use that against you, but the whispers try to cast doubt on your ability to manage the city. You do not see that as anything that should give people doubt, correct?
Absolutely not. The struggles that I've experienced over the course of my life are actually not unique. Many Chicagoans across the city understand what it means to try to make ends meet, to have to choose between buying medication and buying food, making sure that children are taken care of. These are simply the realities that Chicagoans face. And I think part of why our campaign has gotten so much traction is because people identify with that experience in particular. As well, it's important to note that we've had great mayors who've also had financial difficulties in the past, the greatest of them being Mayor Harold Washington, who has a similar story to mine. And as we can see from his tenure, it did not impede his ability to be a phenomenal mayor for this city.
And you also have pointed out that some people with great financial acumen have run the city, and the city still has financial troubles.
Exactly. So we have many individuals who come from wealth, who probably have stellar financials, have never had to file a tax amendment, unlike many other people. And yet the city has been on the brink of financial ruin. So again, that drawing that line between one's personal dealings with finances and being able to manage the city is not a line that I think should be drawn.
Now, with all the degrees and the experience that you have clearly studied and learned a lot. What did you learn from your first run for mayor?
I learned a lot. I learned that it's so important to really have a broad-based base of support across the city. I learned the importance of not only having a great message that resonates, but being able to fund the campaign through to the very end. We ran into some issues when I was challenged in the ballot process, and that drained the rest of the financial resources that we had. And so the biggest lessons were just like many hard lessons from the first time. We've got to have a ground game, which we did, but we also have to have the finances to be able to get up on the air, to be able to withstand a challenge. And those are some of the harder lessons that we learned from my first campaign.
How does one candidate get an old school political wars veteran like Dorothy Brown and Chance the Rapper in the same room and pulling in the same direction?
I think it is a testament to our campaign. We have so much intergenerational appeal. So we definitely appeal to younger voters, millennial voters, who, by the way, outvoted seniors and came out in record numbers in the recent midterm elections. So we have strong appeal with that group, and Chance has definitely helped us to rein in those supporters. At the same time, our message and our vision is very attractive to older voters. And so they see the energy, they see the solutions that are relevant to them, and so they're getting on board. And so Clerk Brown is someone who has a very strong base. She does reach older voters. And she has seen the value. She says she believes that our campaign is what Chicago needs. And so we pull it all together, and it shows our ability to build strong coalitions and to have an intergenerational message.
Do you in some ways run a risk, though, of alienating one side against the other? And whether it's people who are older not quite getting what it is that Chance and the people who are part of that world does, and people who are younger who see Dorothy Brown, and I'm not just talking about, you know, the federal investigations mm-hmm. that still seem to go on but never happen, you know, I mean, never come to fruition, but also just the style of politics that they would assume you are breaking away from.
Sure. So our campaign has been attractive to people who finally want independence. They do not want us to be tied to the machine. They do not want the baggage of corruption and the baggage of the status quo. And Clerk Brown has actually fought the machine and won a number of times. She has always been an independent voice. She's always spoken about being unbought and unbossed. She has always been someone who that message has resonated throughout her campaign. And so there's alignment in our vision, whether it's the millennials or the seniors. Everyone is saying they want independent leadership. They want a fresh break from the status quo. They want people who have a heart for Chicago. And whether it's with Chance or Clerk Brown, those are the characteristics that are present. And those are the sort of values that undergird our campaign. And it's why we are attracting people from all across the spectrum, whether they're the seniors or the young folks.
One thing I want to spend a little time on is this race is likely to come down to getting the vote out. Whether it's by mail or early voting or on election day. Traditionally, experienced political organizations have the advantage in a situation like that. They have armies of foot soldiers. Your campaign's younger, more attuned to social media, but what do you do to get black and brown people and everyone else to actually vote when fewer people seem to be following through on voting these days?
Well, you first have to have a campaign that galvanizes people to where they believe in it so much that they will actually come out to vote. And there is no other campaign that's been able to do that except ours. We have many people who've said, we've never been involved in the political process until now, until your campaign. So not only are we targeting voters, people who have not traditionally been voters, we are actually expanding the base. Every new voter that registers is coming out for our campaign. And that is the difference between us and many of these other campaigns. The other thing that's important to note is that we, you know, when people are thinking about getting involved in politics, they want something that speaks to them, something that resonates with them. Our campaign is unique because people say that it sounds different, it feels different. We're not just going through the motions as so many others are. And that's going to be to our advantage. And we have a strong ground game because I come from an organizing background and it's all about how we organize people. So we started organizing months ago to have foot soldiers. We had last night 500 people in a room phone banking. No other campaign can speak to that kind of enthusiasm, actually bringing people together who are phone banking, who are knocking on doors for us. And that's the difference between us and all the other campaigns.
Are you making your push toward election day? Are you trying to get, I mean, where are you focusing? Will you try mail-in? I mean, where or early voting?
Yeah. So we're emphasizing early voting for sure. We actually have people in college campuses across the city and even downstate because we want them to mail in their ballots. There are many individuals who are in college but still have residency in Chicago that are able to vote. So we're targeting that demographic. We are also making sure that we're bringing people to the polls through early voting. We have a large kickoff event on February 11th that's actually a bus tour that's physically taking people from their locations to the polls. So we are pulling out all the stops. We have a very strong social media presence, but I think our ground game is sort of the capstone to our strategy.
You know, this is almost literally before your time, but almost no one's had a movement like Harold Washington did.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't know that we're seeing that movement. Not that, you know, we didn't see the movement behind Donald Trump either, but Barack Obama had one of those. What are you seeing on the ground? I mean, are you seeing it starting to build? Are we simply not in the right place to spot what's happening?
Well, I think many people are hearing about polls, and when they hear the polls, I think what's being missed is the percentage of undecided voters, people who have seen the traditional candidates who've been up on television for months, who have all of the machine backing and infrastructure, and yet and still cannot break into having a majority of support. What that tells us is that we know that many of our supporters are not traditional poll takers. So they don't have landline phones. They might not respond to a pollster who calls them. And yet the evidence of our support is in the number of people that come out to our events, the number of people that we have phone banking, canvassing. Those are how we know that there's a groundswell of support in neighborhoods. You might not be able to see that from a traditional poll, but looking at the percentage of undecided voters tells you that there is a contingency that is looking for something different than the establishment politicians, and we are offering that better alternative.
How is that ground game reaching across racial and ethnic boundaries and moving there?
One of the beautiful things about my campaign, even the first time I ran, was that we were not locked into a box. We have always been able to reach Black voters, Latino voters, progressives, North Side, South Side, West Side. We've always had just a very diverse coalition racially, ethnically, economically. And then now we've got that, but we also have a diverse intergenerational appeal. And we're capturing that and we're leveraging that. We never had to be put in the box as only catering to one group. Our campaign really has broad-based appeal because of the makeup of our team, because of our commercials, for example. We have really shown the diversity of the city. We've been very inclusive in our language, and that appeals broadly across demographics.
Do you find that you have to have different ways of reaching the different audiences? I mean, what are you doing to get the young people excited versus what you are doing to get some of those older voters who vote consistently?
Yes. And it's all about having a platform that speaks to the issues that they care about. So we know it's quite troubling that one in three millennials have indicated in a report that came out of Kathy Cohen, who's a professor at the University of Chicago, that they don't even see a future in Chicago. That's frightening when we think about what it takes to keep a city fiscally solvent and vibrant. And what do they care about? They care about affordability. They care about having schools where if they do have children, they can send their kids to school. They care about safety. They care about having access to fresh food. These are the things that young people care about, not being saddled with student loan debt, those sorts of things that they care about. On the other hand, we have our seniors who care about security. They want stability. They also don't want to be pushed out of their homes. They don't want to have to worry that they can't sit out on their porch during the day without fear of harm coming to them. They also want to know that their children and their grandchildren can get into schools in their neighborhoods. So there is an overlap of the issues that both young people and elders care about, and our campaign covers the entire spectrum of those issues. Now, how we target them might be different. So we may have engaged seniors in, you know, at senior centers or at gatherings in their place where they live. But for young people, we might do a pull-up, which is just randomly showing up on the corner of 63rd and Cottage Grove to talk about gentrification and have hundreds of young people show up. So our strategy for how we engage them and how we meet them where they are looks different, but the platform is such a broad, comprehensive spectrum that it appeals to all of those different age ranges.
You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I am political editor Craig Delamore. My guest is mayoral candidate Amara Enya. Well, let's talk about some of the issues of the campaign so we don't stick only to politics. The biggest one probably facing the city is would be the pension debt. Well, one of the biggest ones, obviously. Public safety is another one. But you are against reducing pension benefits for new employees, let alone current or retired ones. So how do you save or bring in enough money to bring that pension debt down?
So we have to have an approach that takes into account where the city is wasting money and then a comprehensive revenue strategy for the short and the long term. And so I identify some areas of significant waste right now, one being the $1.7 billion that we're paying for police misconduct. We have not reevaluated development agreements where public dollars have been given to corporations and we're not sure if we're even getting what we've owed. We have large real estate holders in the downtown area that whose values are being underassessed. The city does not go after that aggressively. So there are many opportunities for us to both save money that we currently are wasting, as well as create an immediate revenue that we need, especially prior to 2020 when our pension payments will significantly increase. At the same time, we have to have a comprehensive revenue strategy for the city so that we are fiscally sound moving forward. And that is necessary. It creates the necessity to grow the economy. So I talk about eliminating the waste that we now have with paying with private financial institutions, for example, funding our infrastructure projects. Those things are very expensive to private financial institutions when the city could actually fund its own infrastructure if we had our own bank. The same goes for the hundreds of millions of dollars that we pay in bad bank deals, in fees to private financial institutions that otherwise could be in our own treasury. I talk about expanding the small business sector because that's a critical area of growth that increases household income as well as generational wealth, which means that people have the capacity to afford their property taxes, which is a major source of revenue for us. And also businesses do pay taxes in the city. And with more small businesses, we have more revenues that we can collect. We have to be much more inclusive and have balanced development that invests in neighborhoods that have been disinvested so that they are actually contributing more to the economy. Without that kind of comprehensive strategy, a lot of the talk about pensions has revolved primarily around whether or not we cut benefits. I just fundamentally believe that workers who have already worked have earned their benefits. It is a promise, and we can't talk about cutting benefits without having a comprehensive conversation about how we eliminate waste and corruption and recoup funds for the city, implementing short-term revenue-generating strategies, and then having a long-term revenue strategy for the city.
So if those other things were addressed, it is possible that at some point benefits might be reduced for new employees, for prospective employees who haven't come into the system yet?
Well, I think the tiered system is an example of that. It doesn't require constitutional change. It just requires creating different tiers of employees. So that is a conversation that can definitely happen. I think what most people are concerned about is we never talk about addressing the waste and we never talk about what our overall revenue strategy is. It just hones straight to how do we cut benefits. And that's it's a frightening prospect for especially our seniors.
And there are some analysts who suggest that the benefits aren't where the big problems are in the pension system anyway.
Right.
I want to touch on, you were talking about small business, and I think all of the candidates have said we need to encourage small business, but how do you grow and encourage small business and balanced redevelopment? I mean, what are the mechanisms for keeping that, for first off, for getting the businesses in and keeping them alive,
right?
And also for getting a redevelopment that doesn't take over and turn a neighborhood into something it never was.
Exactly. So I'm the only candidate that's actually worked in this sector. I do manage a chamber of commerce, as well as I've been involved in drafting legislation at the city and state level that's passed that actually helps the small business community. So it's an area of expertise. What we need is for to create more economic development tools that actually help local businesses in our challenged economic corridors, particularly in those communities that have been really struggling. We have to have tax incentives. This means waivers and abatements of taxes and fees. We need to have agreements with landlords that waive the rent in many of these commercial corridors and even commercial strips, because those are the stronger incentives that are needed to attract entrepreneurs to locate in areas where they may be considered higher risk. Also, the way that we create grant programs for business owners in the city is very flawed. Right now, if you're a business owner, you have to have the upfront capital to be able to get a matching grant from the city. Well, if the owner had the upfront capital, they would simply spend the money on what they needed. They wouldn't need the additional grant. So this, I propose creating a fund that actually would provide low-interest loans or grants to business owners as an investment. So they don't have to have the capital up front, but we are investing in their ability to thrive. And after a couple of years, we get a return on investment from a business that is functional, that is hiring locally, and that is providing a service to the community. Those sorts of tools are absolutely necessary. And then on the other point of when we get big box retailers and other large corporations that we're attracting, the city has a very shallow strategy. When they get the corporation here, that's pretty much it. We have to be intentional about creating cottage industries around some of these large developments that come in. So it's not enough to just bring in a Target or a Walmart. We have to intensely work with the small business owners that are also in the vicinity so that they are thriving even as that big box retailer is there. Because what happens is we don't do that. And then when the big box retailer leaves, everyone is sort of scrambling, and then there's a vacancy that hurts the community overall. So these are the sorts of specific strategies that can help to balance out development. We've got to be thinking more about linked development, where we're offering not just a development in one location, but maybe we're directing investment to having a site on the west side, for example, or on the southeast side, for example, so that there's much more value to these projects when they come into our city.
Let's quickly run through a couple of the other things that people are talking about. You've got concerns about casino gaming, legalized marijuana, and commuter tax. I'm not sure if you're ruling any of them out, but they are out there with some problems.
Yeah, so I definitely do not support a casino in the city of Chicago. I think that by the time all of the entities that would stand to have their hand in some of the revenue get their cut, it would not substantially benefit the city at all. I also think from a hospitality industry perspective, it might actually hurt other local restaurants and other entertainment venues in the city by having a casino nearby. So it could actually have a negative effect. What I do think is viable, though, is small business owners being able to have video gaming on site. This is actually something that creates a different line of revenue for business owners, and it helps their bottom line. And again, recognizing that they are such a crucial part of our economy means if we can do things to help their bottom line, then we're helping our economy as a whole. But definitely no, I've completely ruled out a casino. Legalized marijuana, I'm actually in favor of that moving forward. However, I believe that we have to be intentional about creating avenues into participating in that sector, not just as consumers, but as business owners, especially in communities that have been marginalized or that have been hurt for when it was illegal, and also reducing some of those high barriers to participating in the sector. $600,000 for a license is out of reach of most people in this country. So we have to reduce those barriers for participating in the sector.
And the commuter tax?
I think a commuter tax opens up the door for reciprocity from other municipalities. If we have one here, there's nothing that would prevent our neighboring municipalities from implementing their own commuter tax. And it might actually hurt individuals who, folks coming in from the south side or from the west side of Chicago. So I'm not sure that that's not a revenue strategy that I would put at the top of the list.
I do want to touch on policing a bit, at least. I know we don't have that much time. But how do you minimize the hundreds of millions in police misconduct settlement? Doesn't that require better training and tighter rules, much of which is covered in the consent decree? Mm-hmm. But do you do that without new training facilities for the police?
Well, I definitely don't.
And fire, because it's police and fire.
Sure. I don't hinge all of the necessary training and upgrades to policing strategy on a physical facility. I think that a lot of it has to do with the content of the training, the frequency of the training, and the scope of the training. And those things go beyond the physical facility. I think when we talk about balancing out how we invest in our communities, we've not seen the level of investment in education, in expanding, for example, mental health resources and behavioral health resources in an inclusive economy where people can work. We've not seen the level of investment that actually reduces crime. And so we have to invest in those things, not just in investing only in police infrastructure. But the facility is not going to, in my view, it's not, that is not the core of getting better trained police with better frequency of training and better scope of training.
I do want to ask one other out there question. Who are the people you trust for advice on government issues and the things that you might not be, you know, expert in yourself, your kitchen cabinet, to use the old school term?
Yes. So I've had the privilege of, again, working at the top level of government, working in the nonprofit sector, also working as a grassroots organizer. And in my work over the years, I've had the privilege of working with amazing individuals at all levels. And it is that perspective that has informed many of my platform issues. So everything from our public finances, these are issues that I've worked on for a number of years, and they're experts in the field. What we haven't had, unfortunately, in Chicago is the ability to recognize people for their expertise and to bring them in. Instead, we've had leadership that has been a mayor who surrounded himself with yes men and women and not those who actually have expertise and have the ability to see what the city needs. That's been to our detriment.
How do you keep from having people who, if you became mayor, wanting to say yes to you? I mean, isn't that a tendency for people if somebody's the boss?
Yes, I'm certainly not that way. My whole platform is about empowering people. Our campaign is about centering the voices of the people of Chicago. And even the strategies that we employ are all about empowering people with information and access so that they can make the best decisions for them. And my job is as a public servant. My job is to respond to the needs of Chicagoans as best I can. It's not to dictate to them what we will do. And so it's a complete paradigm shift in what leadership should look like in the city. And it's represented in our campaign, not just in the issues that we address, but also in how we campaign and how we talk about ourselves throughout the city.
What do you do that keeps people from being afraid of disappointing you by giving you an answer you don't want to hear?
It's how you respond. My management style has always been to create space for people to be their best, where you're empowering them to function as they are so that they can make the most out of their position. And you cannot lead from a place of fear. Leadership cannot be based on fear. And in Chicago, our leadership for so long has been fear-based. People are afraid of retribution or afraid of being cut out. I represent and come out of communities that have borne the brunt of that. And so my leadership style is about empowering people, because when they're empowered, they do make the best interest for themselves and they're not afraid to speak up on their behalf. And we have an inclusive environment where we're welcoming of different perspectives because we recognize that those different perspectives are what make us better as a whole. And it also helps us to address any blind spots.
Last question, quick answer. Are you having fun?
Definitely, definitely having fun. It's a grind, but it is so worth it.
Thank you very much. I want to thank mayoral candidate Amara Enya for spending this half hour with us. And please do not forget that at least for Election Day, although voting is underway in some places now and expands on the 11th, do exercise your right to vote. People died for it. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website, wbbmnewsradio.com. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I will be back next week with another edition of At Issue. I think that's when we complete the set of 14 mayoral candidates. I hope you will be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dullimore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.